For September the 15th, 2023, we talk about Starfield, Baldur's Gate 3, Dragon Con, and much more. Welcome to Level 472. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meisweth.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back. We took a week off, A, for Labor Day, and B, because I took a whole week off of recording. And people will be disappointed. I didn't go anywhere or do anything, and I made a point not to play games. So
that sounds like some JOMO to me.
JOMO?
Joy of missing out.
Yes. Yeah.
I am not sure how I feel about that.
So I like literally all I have to show for that time is I managed to get my, like, if I stopped with my porch right now, the ongoing saga of Cole's patio or whatever, if I stopped now, it would be fine. I'll put a link to the
photo. I choose to believe, like, envision you sitting on the porch in flames, just being like, this is fine.
I mean the flames are different. The link that I put, it's on my Instagram. The link that I posted is a before and after, like from where it was to where it is right now. Actually, no, this is a little bit out of date because some people from a door contractor came and rewrapped the jams, the outside of the wood there. So that's cool. That is all there for us. But, yeah, that was like my big thing, was getting that finished and then doing a shitload of cleaning and decluttering. So I am the most exciting person who has ever lived, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean, that seems very plausible.
Yeah. Yeah, and I also I reorganized / organized, because things tend to pile up, my big wall of shelves as well. So yeah.
Oh, I saw a picture of this.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, you crushed it.
Yeah. So usually, like, when a new thing comes in, it just sits on top of something else that's there. So every single row is just the books that are up on, you know, standing up like they should on a bookcase, and then a bunch horizontally, as many as I can, stacked on top of those books. So, yeah. Super boring. I want to hear more interesting things. Hey, David, didn't mean to step in front of you. How was Dragon Con?
Oh, man. Was it ever a ride? So this is the first year that things have really been fully back to
like pre-pandemic,
yeah. I guess, levels of craziness.
Mm-hmm.
And which means, I don't know, there were, I'd say, at least 70 or 80,000 people there.
Whoa.
There's a long-running kind of thing of, what is the difference between how many people are officially there and how many people are there when the fire marshal isn't asking?
Right, yeah. Well, I mean, there's the joke version of that, but then there's also, like, literally the thing that happens at any convention of a bigger size is how many people are there but not actually in attendance at the thing, but are going for events around it or associated with it.
That's right. And, yeah, you know, theoretically, like, they check your badge, you know, as you're coming in, you know, that sort of thing. But, you know, I'm sure people, you know, slip through.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
So, yeah. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's just crazy. You know, one of the downsides of Dragon Con is that that then results in, like, a lot of the so I went to, you know, a number of the parties and you know, bigger concerts and stuff like that, and a lot of those, it's like, well, you're gonna have to wait in line for a half hour to an hour to get in.
Wow.
So one of the probably the two main parties I went to the Bunny Hutch, which I think I talked about last year. That's the main party that is put on by the costuming track, and the idea is you either dress as a Playboy bunny or Hugh Hefner, except a cosplay style.
Okay.
So, one sec. I realized I probably should have just, like, posted this to the thing beforehand, but mm-hmm. I will to the backstage beforehand, but I guess I'll do that as we're talking. But basically, what I did is I went with the Playboy Bunny route because I am, you know, not boring.
Mm-hmm. oh, look at me. I'm in my smoking jacket. Cool.
Yeah, they're a very... The problem with that is they're kind of two different approaches to the smoking jacket thing. There's, like, you're either a character that's just like, yeah, you're whatever with a wig and a smoking jacket, or you are a character that's like, oh yeah, I mean, that's just what they wear.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so I did, I'm sorry, devices hate me. So I just posted the picture in the main level chat of I dressed up as a Umbreon.
Oh, from the Pokemons.
Yeah, which is,
oh snap,
already kind of bunny like.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah.
And the actual funny story of this is
you mean bunny story?
The bunny story, yes, is that I did like a version 1 of this outfit last year,
mm-hmm.
and was literally just like, you know, kind of dressing up sort of, you know, as kind of, you know, ravey club wear, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And some random lady is like, oh, are you dressed as a Umbreon? And so I'm like, yes. Yes, I am.
Did you marry that person?
just roll with it. Roll with it.
Exactly. So this time I added the, you know, kind of the ovals or whatever on the forehead and stuff like that to make it a little more thing. But yeah, so I was a Umbreon. The other big party I went to is the there's a LGBT party. They call it Spectrum.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, it's just a big party.
Well, I'm sure it rules.
Yeah, yeah. It's I feel like this is a super super stereotypical thing to say, but it's just like the other parties, except the people actually know how to dance. They are dressed a lot nicer. I think my favorite part is there is a dude just kind of, I don't know, like his outfit from like the neck down was, you know, just, I don't know, something fairly normal that you might wear to a party, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But then had like a giant mascot panda head.
Hell yeah.
And was just, I mean, just killing it. Just, you know, boogieing like there's no tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah.
It didn't occur to me until afterwards. I really hope he was a bear, just because that would make the panda head even funnier. Yeah,
well, but pandas aren't really bears, is the thing. So,
oh, okay. What? So yeah. Maybe it was a fake.
No, pandas are more like, man, I forget. They're more like raccoons.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I need a minute, guys.
So, yeah. So trash panda is more true than any of us thought.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Today I learned.
Okay. Maybe I misinterpreted. I just did a search for pandas aren't bears. Don't quote me on that.
Is this in the same vein as like birds aren't real?
No, that's that's
actually true.
Yeah. Let's see.
I do
here.
Know that so panda in like Asian languages is sometimes translated as bear cat.
True.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Why do some people think pandas aren't bears? And of course, Quora won't load. Sorry, this is a whole thing.
Yeah. No, this is what the podcast is about now.
Yeah. Big bear got to us.
Yeah. Other than that, went to a lot of concerts. Probably my favorite band is a think it's would be called like a dark wave band called Crook Shadows.
Okay.
And you know, it was the final you know, kind of the final big performance of the con. Didn't start until like 2 a.m. of the last night.
Oh wow.
But you know, just really, really great show. You know, amazing. Just kind of, you know, stage presence and, you know, interaction with the audience, that sort of thing. One of the coolest things is their lead singer goes by Rogue, but he in one of the songs he, you know, comes down into the audience and they set up, you know, kind of a stepladder. He climbs the top of that and then sings the song, you know, in the middle of the audience.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
And just so happened, like, the ladder got set up literally right in front of me.
Oh, cool.
All right.
Nice.
So yeah, so I mean, that was you know, a very, very cool experience.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I also have cool pictures of that. I'm sorry, I'm bad at podcasts.
Yeah, I was going to say, like,
you know what podcasts need to be a predominantly visual medium.
We've been pretty bad about that this episode, actually, including my thing. So
we've been pretty bad about that since the show's inception.
Yeah,
true. Yeah.
But then I kind of buried the lead because the other really cool thing is I actually met some people in the community.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so Rookie and Daniel both came.
Oh, nice.
And we actually, one of the things my martial arts group did is taught like a basic Wing Chun course, and they both went to that, which was really cool.
Awesome. Did you know they were coming, or was it just like,
yes,
hey?
Yes. Oh, okay, yeah, I knew they were coming. So
well, it's not special anymore, so... No, sorry.
Yeah, so no, but you know, that was really cool, and yeah, we're hoping maybe to do some more stuff like that in the future, actually. So
nice.
That's awesome. Fun.
Cool.
Yeah, and then the last thing is we also did a demo, so kind of a fight choreography at the Silk Road track.
Mm-hmm.
Which and, you know, forms demonstration, and that's a really interesting thing. It's basically this show where it's like half martial arts, half belly dance, and it's just people coming to the con that like have some performance they've prepared.
Okay.
So I did a Tai Chi sword demonstration. And that ended up interesting because I get started and, you know, the music starts. It's completely different music than what I prepared and, you know, sent them, that sort of thing. But, you know, I go with it. And then halfway through, the person in charge is like, oh, that's the wrong music, and switches it to the other music.
Okay.
So wow. It's like, okay, I guess now I'm doing a completely different tempo. So that was kind of funny. Although on the plus side, it was kind of funny because like afterwards, a whole bunch of people I talked to were like super impressed that I was able to like switch the tempo and that sort of thing. So mm-hmm. It's like they were more impressed because things got messed up.
Stands to reason.
Exactly. And then we did, like I said, the fight choreography, which I've actually got a YouTube video of that. So I'll post that to the level Slack. So listeners can see, but it's, you know, was a lot of fun. What really went well. I think one of my favorite parts is there's a part where basically I do a flying knee strike to someone and they like sidestep, catch me in the air and like kind of lift me up and, you know, drop me.
Mm-hmm.
However, you know, we start out the demo with weapons and, you know, halfway through get disarmed and like, the weapon was like on the ground where I'd you know normally get dropped. So instead he like catches me in the air, spins 180 and like drops me somewhere else, which is, you know, like fine, completely fine from you know, the perspective of, you know, doing the technique, taking the fall, that sort of thing. But like to the audience, looks like super crazy.
Nice.
So yeah. So yeah. Just the whole thing was a great experience. It's a very very intense. What, 4 or 5 days?
Yeah.
Did you bring any con cred back with you?
I did not. However, I was the only one in my contingent, pretty much, that didn't.
No.
So yeah, I got lucky.
Bullet dodged, hopefully.
Yep.
Is
yep.
Concrud just COVID now, or?
So there were some people who got COVID. Our direct group, you know, the people I was staying with, that got it, all tested, and you know, it wasn't COVID. But yeah, there definitely, I've heard a lot of people that got COVID.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's one of those things that's I feel like the world has still not quite figured out how we're going to deal with
that. I
just
mean,
because like it's no longer viable really to be like, you know, go to these things and like, all right, everyone's wearing masks at all times.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it does feel a little bit weird to just be blasé and be like, oh yeah, a bunch of people got COVID. Oh, well.
Yeah. Let her rip. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we actively chose not to figure it out is the thing.
So. Yeah. Well, that's also a thing.
Oh, gosh. Well, happy you came home crud free and, yep. You know, happy you had a good time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's see. Ben, how about you?
Dang, I gotta follow up Dragon Con.
Yeah, sorry.
I've been doing good. I just did hiking and board games over the weekend, so it was very yeah, a little of inside, a little of outside. But
where'd you hit hiking? Like what kind of walk you going on?
Just outside of Mount Rainier, there's like an overpass near there, and so it was like it took 4 hours, so I don't know how many miles that translates to, but maybe like 3 or 4, maybe. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Got to see some lakes and some hills and stuff, and eat lunch in the mountains.
Whoa, so, whoa, whoa, lakes and hills?
Yeah, I know.
Calm yourself.
But I was more, well, yeah, it was a great time. But then I also got to play my favorite game, Gaia Project, so it was a great, both events were very nice, so.
I kind of want to know if, you know, out there, if your quote unquote hills are probably the same size as like the quote unquote mountain that I hike.
Yeah, no, it's all relative. I mean, yeah. I hiked enough that I didn't like pass out or anything. So it's not, I don't know. It's whatever.
I mean, I feel like not passing out, you know, that's generally a good call.
Anyone you walk away from, you know?
Yeah, some people contest that. They're like, it's not a good hike unless I pass out, but I don't know.
No.
Have you guys it's like the guy at the gym that like runs on a treadmill until he throws up.
Yeah, I don't care for that.
Have you guys heard of the concept of like type 2 fun? I don't know if that's mm-hmm. something that's specifically out here or not.
What's that?
It's like you're doing something that you don't necessarily enjoy until afterwards you enjoy looking back on it. So like,
oh, okay, yeah.
So like a really strenuous hike where, you know, you're kind of miserable during the time, but then at the end of the day, you're like, yeah, I feel accomplished or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Delayed onset fun. Yeah.
Exactly. So this did not venture into type 2 fun. It was like type 1.25 fun.
Nice. So,
yeah. yeah, that's all I got.
Cool. Dennis, how about you?
So I went over the weekend to St. Louis. It was an anniversary trip with my wife and I, and we went and saw Hozier live in concert, not realizing this is like the kickoff. It was the kickoff concert for his U.S. tour.
Okay.
So that, I don't know if anyone's familiar with that artist, but
but I love the name.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's just his last name actually. But does a ton of great work, just has a new CD come out and was a hell of a fun concert. So that was good times. The only wrinkle was that twice during the concert, someone in like the standing room only up front collapsed.
Oh,
and he like, and kudos to Hozier. He stopped mid song, very calm about it, just kind of raised his hands like, hey, so sorry, someone just went down, want to be safe, can you guys please come and help this person, you know, thank you everyone for bearing with us and everything, and then you know, jumped right back in. So
sounds like sucks. A type 2 fun concert goer.
Yeah, it was, I mean, it sucks that two people, you know, I don't know if it was dehydration or took too much or what, but it sucks that it's happening.
It was those edibles.
So maybe. And I was just happy that, you know, I didn't find out at the concert he was like a terrible person that would rant or something when that happens.
Yeah. No, that's
handled it like a professional.
Handled it gracefully. Got some class. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, apart from those two stoppages, the concert was phenomenal.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Well, I mean, that sounds like banter to me. And I know that we've probably got some games to talk about so we can do the regular kind of show. What with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss? And why don't we get started with...
The grind.
The grind.
The end boss.
Nope. That won't work again.
Did you know if you say the end boss right as Sonic is blinking the second time, it'll take you to a level select screen?
Yeah, and Aerith will come back to life. Sorry, spoilers. So he got me all messed up now. where we talk about the games, the grind, where we talk about the games we've been playing over the past period of time or so. Who has something new?
I do.
All right,
as
Ben.
Do I.
And I only have one thing, and I think other people have played it as well, so I figure we can group take this one. Okay. Who's playing Baldur's Gate 3?
Ooh, I am not.
All right.
I am not.
So, Dennis. You're my port in this storm. It came out on PlayStation 5 last week, so that's what prompted me to get it. I don't are you playing on PlayStation or are you playing on PC, Dennis?
No, I had rationalized not getting it by saying that I was going to play Starfield because it was free on Game Pass.
Yes.
Then I started playing Starfield and realized that I wanted to play Baldur's Gate.
Starfield was the rationalization to play Baldur's Gate.
They're very different games.
They are extremely different games, and boy, do I have thoughts on the hour or so I put into Starfield.
Actually, let's just talk about that first, because I want to hear some traction on Starfield, then we can segue to Baldur's Gate. You want to do that?
Yeah, so that is what I've been playing as well. And
this is getting things way too complicated. All right.
Okay, we need our vice president to break the tie.
Yeah.
As we all know,
I think what we actually do, just to make it like a puzzle, is Gwen splits apart each of what we say into our own things, but we're talking in real time, so you have to like her story it to put it back together.
Right. I like Gwen. I don't want to make her do that. So
we like her not hating us.
Yeah.
So David, did you have anything else besides Starfield?
I do not, actually.
You do not? Okay, so why don't you lead off with Starfield, and then you and Dennis can hit with that, and then Dennis will pick up with Baldur's Gate, which Dennis and Ben can go with, and then Ben can do whatever he was going to do after.
Order achieved.
Yes. So this lead-in makes it tough, because I have very mixed feelings about Starfield. And I was going to start with like, oh yeah, you know, here's all these things I like about it, and then here's, but we've kind of tipped our hands that it has some problematic elements. So the good of it is, you know, it's really cool to see a, you know, Bethesda-ass Bethesda game. Again, because what, for the last decade they've just been making Skyrim over and over again?
I mean, let's not forget, I also thought that, but then I remembered, oh, Fallout 4 exists, and Fallout 4 is a Bethesda-ass Bethesda game, and is really good.
Isn't Fallout 4 like a decade old?
2015, I think it is. So just shy of it. Yeah.
Right. So, yeah. So this is the first good thing they've made since Fallout 4.
aren't you the person who has frequently talked about 76 and has enjoyed it, actually?
That doesn't mean it's good,
but it does. Okay. And also the difference in structure does. Okay. I understand. There's been a lot of technicality talk on this.
Oh yeah. That is going to be the theme of this discussion.
Yeah. I take your meaning on it. It feels like it is the first Bethesda thing that is not an online game that has come out in a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's really cool to see that. It's also, I really dig the, at least somewhat, channeling some pseudo hope punk, like, hey, isn't space cool type of things.
Okay.
Which I think's neat. It's also has a lot of really cool features. You know, it's cool to be able to see all of these random all these different, you know, what I think there's like hundreds maybe of planets and moons and stuff like that you can land on.
And they're proc-gen to a certain degree. Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't quite figured out to what degree they are. There's definitely things that are not proc-gen. And even the ones that are seem fairly bespoke.
What are you speaking of when you say that? Because I know they'll like populate with like random areas of interest, and the areas of interest are probably like prefabbed. But
yeah, you know. Maybe that's it. I was wondering, or if maybe if they like the areas of interest are proc-gened out of like prefabbed pieces. I don't know.
Mm. Yeah,
but yeah, you know that's a lot of fun. Seems like there's also somewhat more variety than there is like in Skyrim, where everything is just a cave.
Mm-hmm.
Although I will say there is definitely a certain degree to which you now get like cave ship interior or sci-fi facility. Mm-hmm. So it's not a ton more. The other things that's kind of cool, there is a ship crafting and ship combat mechanic.
Did you see the optimum ship that person made?
Yes,
that is basically it is like the outside edges of a cube that every shot will pass through because the enemy always aims at center mass.
That's fantastic.
There's, like I said, the theme of this is going to be there's a lot of great things, but there's also a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm.
I have, though, seen if you go to the Reddit, even if you're never going to play the game, going to the Reddit for Starfield is worth seeing just to see the things people have made. I think my favorite so far is someone made a pretty convincing Planet Express ship.
Yep, saw that.
Ooh. Oh yep.
Mm-hmm. So that is cool. I will say the interface for making the ships is utter shit. Just the controls are incredibly user unfriendly.
I mean, it looks like CAD, so that kind of lines up, I guess.
yeah, I have my own feelings on that, in that like CAD controls are a solved problem by Rhino, and everyone else just insists on not learning from them. But that's a whole other can of worms.
Is that just because Rhino was the CAD program that was at our high school?
Honestly, it uses a dramatically different control scheme than every other CAD software I've seen. Mm-hmm. And I think is legitimately more user friendly.
Okay.
But again, that's a whole nother thing. base building also returns, although I have not actually engaged with that yet. But, once you have sufficiently explored a planet, you can then establish an outpost on it.
Okay.
One of the
What does the outpost do?
Go on.
Sorry, what does the outpost do, though?
so it's basically just like building a base in Fallout 4. So you can, you know, extract resources. You can, I think, do automated construction, things like that.
Okay.
One of the downsides is you can get multiple ships, and you can even, like, if you take out a ship's engines, you can board it and basically take it over and make it your own. However, and your outposts have, you know, the ability to set up like shipping lanes and stuff. However, mm-hmm. you can't actually use those ships to do that. So there's no mechanic where it's like, oh, I'm going to like steal a lot, you know, a ton of ships and then, you know, get a leg up on my, you know, shipping industry. Nor is there something where it's like, oh, I'm going to build like a super great hauler and then have my NPCs use it to make me money.
Gotcha.
And I feel like that's kind of the, to me, the theme I'm seeing a lot here is there are a ton of cool mechanics and, you know, ideas that they've implemented in this game. They just don't do anything with them.
Hmm.
You know, similarly, there is a smuggling mechanic and, you know, oftentimes when, you know, if you raid a pirate ship and, you know, board and take it over, you'll end up getting, you know, all the goods they've stolen.
Hmm.
However, there's not really a smuggling mechanic so much as there is, you just have a certain cargo type that is like hidden cargo. And if mm-hmm. you have that, then there's a chance that when you get scanned, they won't find it. As opposed to something like Elite Dangerous, where you getting scanned is based on like your ship's heat signature. So you have to do things like shut off life support at the last moment and try to like skid into the port without engines and life support so that your reactor's not on and they don't notice you.
Okay.
So like basically they've got smuggling, but there's no actual mechanic behind it.
Limited effects, yeah.
It's not, there, like every facet of this game has been done better in another game.
Right.
And it might I don't think it's a game that has done all of the facets, but it is like it has not done a single one of, like its thing is having all the facets, not doing any of them particularly well.
Exactly. Yeah. I would say, like, I think the biggest way I would kind of describe this is the game is either No Man's Sky with much worse, like, exploration and, you know, base building and all those mechanics, but, you know, better and more RPG mechanics and storyline and stuff. Or it's Elite Dangerous, again, with dramatically worse ship-to-ship combat and exploration and stuff like that, but with much more story.
Mm-hmm. I think one point I heard that I thought was interesting, and so I want to know what you guys think about it, is, like, between Skyrim and this, like, there's, like, a lack of immersion since there's so many, like, cutscenes of, like, getting on and off planets, and it's not, like, a continuous experience.
Yeah, that's one of the big things that that someone I know pointed out when I compared it to Elite Dangerous is mm-hmm. whereas in Elite, there's actually a lot of thought that goes into like landing on a planet and docking, you know, because you have to like think in terms of if, you know, if you're docking in space, like when do you jump out of light speed so that, you know, you're going slow enough that you don't just blow past the planet or, you know, past the space station, or, you know, if you're going into atmosphere, it's actually a multi-step process where, you know, you enter atmosphere and then glide and then do your final approach. Whereas this, it's all like pull up things in a menu, hit go, and then it plays a cutscene.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The bigger structural thing, and I haven't played this game, but a thing that kind of dampened my expectation for it, or let's say excitement. Like I installed this just because I mm-hmm. have Game Pass. Figured if I set it to download now, and if I get a wild hair to play it, at mm-hmm. least then yeah. I could just jump into it. You know,
got a wild hair to play it, I yeah. bet that would be popular on Twitch.
It probably would. I could at least, you know, get a little bit of TikTok out of it. I heard somebody say that, like, if something you enjoyed about Skyrim was the large cohesive world where being at one end of it felt appreciably different from being at the other, but they were still part of the same, you know, landmass or whatever, or what have you, mm-hmm. This would not be for you, because each of the planets, while distinct from each other, is its own smaller map, and a bunch of smaller maps disconnected does not do as much as a larger map that is connected but not as big as all of the smaller planets put together.
Mm-hmm. I think that's accurate. I think, and I'm bringing this up as kind of a slightly different way to look at, not as a disagreement, because I think you're right. I do think where it gets some of that Skyrim stuff is in terms of there is definitely relationships in terms of, like, hey, this is, you know, was it like Free Colonies space, whereas this other area is, I think it's United Planets, you know, basically the different factions and relationships to that.
Yeah.
And so I do feel like there is some degree of kind of a sense of connectedness and stuff like that. Interesting early game one is that the soul system is one, because, you know, it's the one solar system we actually know a lot about.
Mm-hmm.
There's no life there because, like, we kind of already know there's actually no life there.
Right.
But then also in the game's story, at some point, all of Earth's water evaporated or something.
That sounds like us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And so basically, the soul system is like the uninhabited, like, decrepit, kind of, you know, strip mined part of the universe.
Yeah, it's where we started. Yeah, we would have used it up first before we headed out. Yeah,
right. So, like, there is a degree to which, like, when you're, you know, going to Earth and Mars and stuff like that, there is kind of a common feeling of, like, you know, this is an area where there's a lot of ruins but very few people.
Mm-hmm.
But so I would say there is a case to be made the other way, but I think you're basically right.
Yeah.
I mean, to a certain extent, that's space, right? Is there might be interesting things on the planets, but in between, there's not a lot.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I don't know how much they could have done to fix that.
I mean, even No Man's Sky, like, does a lot better job with, like, continuity. Mm-hmm. Where you just do things from your cockpit, and
you can do that, by the way. It is mm-hmm. it is possible to do that manually. It's just not fun or interesting.
One person on Twitch did it. It took 7 hours to get from one planet to another.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which Wait, is, what is? Oh, you can go from, like, solar system in No Man's Sky, or
no? I'm talking Starfield. About in Starfield. Somebody okay. made the trip in 7 hours. They did it on Twitch. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah, technically you can do some crazy stuff like that in No Man's Sky. I have been enjoying it, and I think part of it for me is the kind of optimistic, really humanist, take on space and, you know, exploration and science and those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
Partially because of, like, the shitty world we actually live in. Like,
yeah.
that gets a lot of good grace from me.
Mm-hmm.
Which, on the one hand, I think is legitimate, and the other hand is probably not entirely fair. The other thing I did want to bring up is I have run into at least one scenario that was a very cool and very unique scenario. I jumped into a system and found a pirate ship raiding a broken down, basically like bank ship. So kind of the equivalent of like
an armored truck.
Armored truck. Thank you.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I fought them off and got on the ship, it turned out that its artificial gravity was on the fritz. So basically, I'm going through a Skyrim-style dungeon
mm-hmm.
where every, like, 15 seconds or so, it switches between zero gravity and having gravity.
Oh, that's cool.
And, you know, when you have are in zero gravity, it kind of controls somewhat similar to, like, swimming in most games.
Mm-hmm.
However, you're predominantly fighting with projectile weapons, so that means every time you fire, it's pushing you back.
Oh, that's fantastic.
There's also some light puzzling where you have to do things like wait for the gravity to turn off and then hightail it up a elevator shaft before the gravity turns back on.
That's yeah. cool.
So, like, I will say, like, there are legitimately cool things in this game. It's just got a lot of problems.
Yeah.
One of the things that I think one of the biggest things that pisses me off about this, and this is totally petty and dumb, and, like, I realize that, but it really pisses me off how many reviews gave this game 10 out of 10 or like 9 or 9.5.
IGN gave it a 7 out of 10, which I lulled at.
Yeah.
And people sent them letter bombs. Like,
really?
Oh, no, Jesus. They didn't really send them letter bombs, but like it caused an uproar because big popular new game didn't get a 9 or up. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, like, I would say, like, I like this game. Like, I have a positive regard of this game, but it does not deserve a you know, 9 or 10 or whatever. Like, it is a game that I think does enough interesting things to justify it, but it is a very flawed game.
Mm-hmm. I mean, at least right now, like,
yeah,
I don't know. It seems weird to give that kind of rating to a Bethesda game at launch.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. And yeah.
It's the meme of I don't know what I expected.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, Skyrim was a complete game at launch, right? And Fallout 4 was complete-ish.
Skyrim had a better launch. Yeah.
Yeah.
So one of the takes that I really enjoyed is it seems to me that this game is much less buggy than most Bethesda games, although mm-hmm. not bug-free, more on that in a moment. But one of the takes I heard someone say is they spent all their time and finally released a relatively bug-free game, but they did it by just including no quality of life features.
Mm.
I do want to say, though, a bug that I found really funny is one of the scripted events is you basically jump to a system, a captain hails you, you know, panicking, asking for help. You know, suddenly, you know, line drops and then someone completely different picks up is like, no, everything's fine. The captain's just asleep. And, you
we're know, all fine here. How are you?
Exactly. And, you know, you get on and obviously it's pirates and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that because of that setup, the ship is flagged as a civilian ship. So that means, like, if you blow it up or if you kill everyone on it, your companions get really, really pissed because as far as the game's concerned, you just, like, wiped out a civilian ship.
Okay.
The most funny version of this, which is almost worth, you know, save and then do it just because it's hilarious, is if you kill everyone on the ship except one person and then just stand there and let your companion kill them, they will kill them and then immediately lose their shit on you and be like, you murder! Why did you kill them? No. So, yeah, sometimes Bethesda bugs are kind of entertaining.
Oh, but those are fun. Like, that jank is good. It's anything like progress losing. That's a concern. Yeah.
So that story, though, continues the theme of my playthrough of the game, which is Bethesda has given no support whatsoever to a quote-unquote evil playthrough.
Mm. Oh, really?
So you know, that, I mean, that's always been a thing, I feel like, in Bethesda's games. You know, Fallout 3, you can nuke the city, and that's viable. And, you know, there's just all these, you play any way you want, right? Make whatever moral decisions you want, and the game kind of follows with you. And so my mentality jumping into Starfield was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to start evil. I'm not doing the goody two shoes run before I go and screw around. I'm just going to start at negative 10, and let's see how evil we can be. I'm gonna you know, piss off everyone. I'm gonna take all the edgelord dialogue options, etc.
Gonna punch all the reporters.
Punch all the reporters, and just like have fun, see where it goes. Bethesda, like that's the kind of thing they do. So this seems like the right place to indulge that fantasy. Mm. You literally cannot hurt people in the opening sequence. Like, they give you this big miner's tool and say, oh, be careful with it, and you know, it's a laser, and I was like, all right, here we go, and I turn it on in the face of the person who's guiding me through. They don't even react.
Come on.
Did not a comment, not a hey, watch where you're pointing that thing. Just nothing. Like they had plot shield. So I went to one of the NPCs on the side and shot them with it. And oh, they react. They're taking damage. Okay. So I held it on them. But the most you can do is knock them down and they go to like a down but not out kind of state. After a little bit, they'll get right back up and continue what they were doing. And again, no acknowledgement that I've done anything to them. Not like, you jerk, watch where you're pointing that, you know, whatever. It's just not in there. And so literally this opening sequence is a corridor where you can't do anything but follow them to a cutscene, and there's nothing for you. Compare that to like the beginning of Fallout 3, where there's kind of this interactive way that you're you know, making these choices about your skills and your appearance, and you actually, like, if you indulge in the evil quote-unquote dialogue options there, you know, that there's a whole little storyline that's supported. You can like bully your best friend instead of supporting her when bullies are, you know, ragging on her, and you can leave your old nemesis to die or even actively kill your old nemesis and all this stuff. Like,
can join the tunnel snakes.
Exactly. Just in the tutorial area. And that was so much fun when I did my little bit of evil playing of Fallout 3. And that's kind of what sparked the idea of, oh, I'll, instead of playing Fallout 3 again, I'll do this for Starfield. But so you get outside the initial area, you kind of meet the plot instigator, whatever person, and all the dialogue options are some, variant of like, golly wally, mister, I'd love to help you.
Yeah.
No, nothing. Yo, go ahead.
No, I mean, I just said, like, I was going to summarize that very pithily and say that for a long time, I would say pretty much since always, at least all of them that I know, Bethesda games are RPGs, but not role-playing games. And it seems like they stopped trying to disguise that fact.
I'm bringing this up, not criticism, just as different things. Like, to me, that's a good thing. Like, I don't know. Like, that's... I've never seen a good evil run in any game where evil wasn't the only solution.
Yeah, I don't know. I think
that's what Republic did it well. Baldur's Gate, which we'll talk about, I think does it decently well. Too.
Oh, no, I'm not talking about video games in general. I'm talking specifically about Bethesda games.
I think that's probably accurate. And I don't know. I decided on the way I wanted to have fun with this game, and the game was like, no, you can't do that. And that pissed me off. So, you know, I got to the first like populated city area and started killing people. And then there wasn't really a way to get the cops off me. And it's like, man, that's a drag. If you murder people, they're going to come after you.
See, although I feel like that's contrary to like the entire thing the game is, though.
Well, yeah, you said the hope punk, right? And I think that's maybe they leaned into that at the expense of anything more chaotic. But again, the funny thing of like, you could kill the nobody NPCs, but if you engaged with anyone that was important, essentially anyone that had like dialogue, you could only put them down but not out. And then after a little bit they get back up.
That is an older I think that dates back to like Fallout 3, actually. Okay. Where you can't permanently kill. It was either that or like in, I forget how it was in Oblivion, but in Morrowind, if you killed somebody who was important, it would give you a message and say like, hey, you have severed the ties of fate. Like it will be
paradox. What was it? Mel Gear Solid.
Yeah. And like you could do that with like the main god who would help you, and it would let you continue, but it would let you know that like, hey, you fucked up the quest here.
There was a
back door to do it, but that's because Morrowind is weird and singular, and I should play it again.
It's basically an Elder Scrolls game, except good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, the other thing was, I started getting into combat here with the police. I'm level 2. And it got up to they were sending level 12 people after me.
Okay.
There was no appreciable difference between like the level 2 and level 12 enemies. I don't know why there's numbers next to them. Hmm. Like it was there had to be some behind the scenes rubber banding going on, but everybody died the same. Didn't
see
matter.
That's weird, because I've actually found the combat to be quite difficult in this.
Oh, I went melee. I just had
that's probably part of it.
Yeah, I just had a hatchet and just hit whoever was coming at me, and again 10 levels higher than me, and just did not feel any different. So that it was like, okay, the choice systems aren't there. The combat definitely isn't there. And if I can kill everyone at level 2, like why am I bothering with this? And I dumped it. So
I want a game that supports my hatchet habits.
That's right. I want a game that is challenging if I overstep my bounds, rather than just kind of accommodating it.
Mm.
Which led me to Baldur's Gate.
Yeah.
Any final Starfield thoughts before we transition?
Nope. I didn't have an ounce of fun. I'm sorry. At no point did I have fun playing that game. Oh, well, good try. It's so funny. Like everyone before these games came out, or I guess between when Baldur's Gate 3 and Starfield came out, they're like, oh my God, the era of the RPG is back. We got Baldur's Gate 3 doing it right. We got Starfield. It's going to be amazing. And it's like, no, it's just Baldur's Gate 3.
I'll counter that.
I know. I'll say I think Starfield is still a good game and will patch up.
You're a goody-two-shoes narc that doesn't know fun from anything.
Yeah, I bet you haven't hatcheted anyone, David.
So
you never joined the Tunnel Snakes.
Actually, I'm sorry. I do have one other pitch for Starfield, and this will be quick. One of the starting things you can choose, one of the traits, is that you have parents that are still alive.
Sorry, I love that as a perk.
Nope. And it's actually kind of from a strictly gameplay standpoint, it's actually kind of a detriment, because you periodically automatically send money home to them, like to help support them,
like remittances. Yeah.
Yep. But anyways, the fun part is when you meet them, your mom and dad are the voice actors are Kira Nerys from DS9 and Tuvok from Star Trek Voyager.
Okay.
Which, I at least appreciate that they went all in on like the campy sci-fi thing.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's all I had about that. That just made me smile.
That's sweet.
I want to hear about Baldur's Gate 3.
Yeah.
How many bears have you fucked?
I haven't found a single bear to fuck yet.
I know. I found lots of bears
to kill. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I guess I haven't tried especially hard to fuck them, so I can't confirm or deny.
You just throw hatchets at them, which you can do in the game.
Yeah, it's like throwing things.
Turns
is great.
Out that does not count as foreplay for bears.
I mean, we all. I just on another podcast I was listening to, you heard about what's the Leonardo DiCaprio Oscar movie, The Remnant or Revenant or
Killers of the Flower Moon?
Revenant.
Oh, sorry. Revenant. Yeah.
No, but like apparently early footage of like the fight scene with him and the bear got leaked at one point, but people misinterpreted it that something very different was happening with the bear.
Mm.
So
interesting.
Anyway, continue.
Baldur's Gate 3. So this is basically D&D, and this is basically the best implementation of D&D I've seen in a video game. If people played Divinity Original Sins, it is very similar to that model of game. They've just moved it very close to the D&D framework of D&D 5e specifically. And yeah, it is very impressively done, in my opinion. This has made 2023 like the year of D&D, given the movie and this implementation of it. The two best representations of D&D I've seen for something that's usually been fraught with terrible representation throughout the years. I'm only a third of the way through the game too, and that's like 30 or 40 hours I think so far.
How would you measure that, like what level are you? Maybe that
it's broken into acts. I don't know if explicitly put up like act 1, act 2, act 3 or whatever.
Act 3 is really beefy to my understanding.
Oh really? Okay. Yeah. Shucks. Well, I mean, good, I guess, but there's a lot. Like, I'm gonna take a break for like a day or two. Love it. I've just been playing it pretty heavily. I'm not sure how to describe this. I think most people have an idea of what you guys know what Original Sin 2. Have you played that at all?
It's like a you know, CRPG top down perspective that shifts into turn based mode when there's combat. But you can use all of your spells, etc., outside of combat. It's just when you're officially quote unquote in initiative.
Yeah.
And that slows down.
And this developer Larian, like their trick is that it's kind of an immersive sim as well. Like things that you do in the environment or changes in the environment, even outside of combat or before combat, can affect what's going on there. And that includes like a very robust like number of outcomes. I tripped over myself for saying the word robust. That doesn't sound like a thing I would say. There are a number of different outcomes. There are a number of different like dialogue based ways to approach things that can get you into and out of combat in different kind of cases. Yeah.
Well, I'll give an example. Early on, so I'm playing as a gnome druid. Early on you come upon a group of essentially kind of grave robber types. And I had snuck up to them and, you know, it was like, oh, okay, I'm going to position myself to get the drop on them. So I can sneak around them as they're just, you know, discussing what to do with this kind of crypt that they found, and like, you know, who should go in to get the treasure from it. And they're kind of scared of it, yada, yada. And so I'm sneaking around to kind of get the drop on them. When my cleric gets seen and all, they're like, oh, you know, who are you? What are you doing here? And I decide to lie and tell them, you know, oh my God, like it's dangerous. There's something coming. You got to run away, and succeed. And they're like, oh, you know, crap. All right, we're out of here. And they run away. But then the locked door to their hideout is behind them. and there's someone, you know, there's someone in there. They're like, who's there? What the leader on the outside had been a gnome. And because I was a gnome, I had the opportunity or like the option to try to impersonate the leader.
Okay.
Which I did successfully. And they just opened the door and let me into their hideout, at which point, you know, combat started and things went down. But, you know, I bypassed an entire encounter. And then talked my way in to somewhere without ever once doing combat.
Yeah.
And that wasn't even me explicitly trying to avoid combat. It's just the opportunities that popped up while playing.
Yeah. The game supports that differentiation of play style.
It's like having a very good and thorough and accommodating DM is the way that I've heard it described.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
But then, to AKA its credit,
a good DM.
Well, you know, it's.
And to their credit, though, they do a good job in writing of coming up with situations where there's a lot of different ways to attack it. Like, for example, if there's like a gate that someone's like blocking, like a force field gate or something, it's like you can sneak and pickpocket them and steal the keys out of it and get through that way. You can talk to them and try and do that. You can fight them and kill them and take it off their corpse. Like, all those ways are supported, you know, and they like set it up in that way. Yeah, so there's like such a good degree of flexibility for those types of things, but it also gives you just like fun things to do, like fun options to pick, even if it goes against like your class build or whatever. Like, I had the option of kicking someone off a boat, and I was like, you know what, I'm gonna do that. I don't like that person, and even though I'm like full dex build and not strength build, but it was accommodating, and I could do that. And
Yeah,
and the game is just like littered with choices of being able to do that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it might be the most fun to just share like fun moments from playing, because you know it's an epic D&D campaign adventure, and unless you're actively avoiding it, you probably know the high level of the story, that you know you've all been infected with mind flayer worms and you're trying to find a cure for it, and that's kind of banded all these people together.
God, in the world. I love that a developer latched onto and recognized the storytelling potential of Illithids. Mm-hmm. It's so, yeah.
They're so freaking good, amazing.
Get some Cthulhu horror in that D&D.
Yeah.
They're just such weird monsters. Do a search. You can probably find it in a PDF, or you can get it used. Follow your ethics. But there's there was a series of second edition, like, monster specific like splat books, like rule books. Look up the one called The Illithiad, that like goes entirely into like the way the Illithid cities are put together and like their culture and like their life cycle and stuff like that. Ooh. It fucking owns. The other one in that series is about beholders, and it's called I, Tyrant. I like iRobot, which is good. And then the third one is about Sagan, which I don't care for the Fishmen. So,
aw, yeah.
Fishmen get no love.
Yeah, but it's such a good like story. Like it's a very plausible like setup for an actual D&D campaign. You know, of like an explanation to bring all these disparate people together and want to fight with one another.
Oh, desperate too.
Yeah. Yeah. True. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think the class that I rolled with is I'm a half-orc monk, and basically have like infinite movement for the first turn instead of just like run into battle and then just punch people until they die. I'm doing weaponless. Yeah, because if you do weaponless, you can. There's a perk where you can use dex as your modifier instead of strength. And so I think that's a strategy I almost always try and do in these games, is like, okay, now I'm just going to use strength as a dump stat, like have that be at 8 and just max out dex and try and reasonably balance everything else. Yeah. But just in playing it, like I'm already like thinking about possibilities of like what other classes I want to roll as and play the game again with. I think we talked about Gloomhaven on this podcast, like the board game.
Yeah, talked about it a bunch.
Yeah, one of the strengths of that is like how cool the different classes are and how differentiated they are. And it's just amazing that in this, even though it's this universal combat system you have, it does accommodate like several different play styles that you can do. And you feel like you're really embodying whatever class you design. Mm-hmm.
I would contend that playing as a druid is the objectively right way to play the game.
Oh my!
Because you can always have speak with animals on.
Oh yeah, you don't have to rely on a potion. Yeah,
which is so well supported.
Yeah,
the number of just like crazy conversations and details that I've gotten, just because I always like that's a because it's a ritual casting. It doesn't even take a spell slot. And so every time I start the day, you know, it's the first thing I cast, actually, along with like six other spells. We'll get to that in a little bit, but, like chatting up the random bears and boars and oxen that are roaming around the kind of first town area. Just there's so much crazy stuff. There's like a group of three oxen eating hay.
Yeah.
And you know, the first thing I would expect which is, you know, you talk to one and they mention that, like, oh yeah, some of the people hide their shinies in our haystack. I hate it because I'll bite it sometimes.
Okay.
And so it kind of points you to, like, oh, you might be able to find a little extra gold in there.
In the ox? Yeah.
No. Well,
I was going to say.
In the ox too, maybe.
Yeah.
But it can be better in that the third ox that you talk to is definitely a polymorphed human that refuses to acknowledge that he's not actually an ox. And you start trying to question, like, wait, don't you seem kind of, he's like, I forget what the exact line is, but at a certain point he's like, I have nothing further to say to you except, and I mean this, moo. And he's like, you know, he says something about he's trying to get to Baldur's Gate, which is like the city that you're headed towards. So, the name of the game. I have a feeling I'll see that cow again.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know,
I'm going to see that cow again.
Yeah. You know, so that was just wild. You know, you find a dog whose owner has been killed and you have this really like heartfelt conversation trying to, you know, they don't understand that their owner is not going to get up. And so trying to like talk to them about that is heartbreaking, but really, really, affecting.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually like they came back to my camp, which I don't know if I would have been able to get them to do that. If I didn't have speak with animals on.
Yeah.
And then third and finally, my favorite interaction, although there's been a ton more, just squirrel that just is running around. So I talk to it and it starts yelling at me like, get out of my way. You know, he just cussing me out and yelling at me like he wants to pick a fight. And there was an option of kick the squirrel.
No, jeez.
And I was like, this little fucker is just like coming at me. Yeah, I'm gonna kick the squirrel.
Yeah.
And it, you kick it into a tree and it like explodes like a water balloon of blood. I didn't know I could kick brutal. That hard. Yeah, it's like just get out of here, you scamp. But no, I full on like, you know, bicycle kicked it into a tree. But yeah, just craziness. And that's just off of the one spell of speak with animals.
Yeah. So I have to ask, do they have you know, do your companions have any problems with you exploding squirrels?
I don't think I got a reaction to that one.
The way that's implemented in this game is like it's I guess it's the same thing as like Fallout, where it's like it'll just say in text like so and so approves, so and so disapproves, mm-hmm. like whoever's in your party, and so
which can, I oh go ahead
no you can get a feel for the personalities that way, where it's you get to know the characters better just through that text. Of like, mm-hmm. oh, I made an aggressive decision and they liked it. So that's like, good. I should keep going that direction if I want to earn their favor.
Mm-hmm. I constantly get messages that Shadowheart and Gale, which are kind of the two, you know, they're like your good characters. And I'm generally being nice to people. I constantly get notices that they approve of things. Mm-hmm. And then I open up the like reputation tab or whatever to see what their opinion of me is. And it has not moved.
Oh,
I don't like it's, and I don't know if it's just like there are that many interactions that like this is going to have to accumulate over a long, long time, or what. But yeah, it's like, you know, I've gotten Shadowheart approves of so much that I've done, but she's like neutral on me, you know.
No,
same with Gale. I think Gale is like fair opinion of me.
I haven't been tracking that at all, actually.
Really?
Yeah. I imagine it'll change as like their story progresses more.
As like, you decide who you want to bone down on, yeah.
You just won. yeah. I think here's my favorite like weird detail about how I'm playing the game. So I have like my core party members to make it easier at camp to figure out where my party members are, because there's like usually just a mess of people standing around. The dots are color coded on the map, which is helpful. But I just took all the clothes off of everybody not in my party and kept the armor on for the ones that are in my party, both male and female.
If you're useless to me, you're in the nude zone.
Yeah.
That'll teach them.
Uh-huh. But the game's just so much fun, though. And to your point, yeah, there's so many interactions. It's for me, it's hard to tell how much is intentional on their part and how much are like happy accidents or whatever. There's two that I'm thinking of in particular, but I'm not going to give them because I don't want to spoil them in case if someone else plays it and they sure, get to yeah. these parts. But yeah, there's so many situations where after it happens, I'm like, that's totally D&D. Like, that's exactly what D&D is, where it's like something insane happened because of a whim and it was supported and it was like an amazing outcome.
There's designing specifically, like making those situations in a bespoke way. And there is A, creating the systems where that can happen by accident, and B, when that pops up in testing, deciding it's actually okay if that happens because that rules. Like, yeah, there are a bunch of different levels that make that to me more impressive than if they like handcrafted that scenario for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And yeah, to your point about like the interactions, like, yeah, it when you called it a simulation, that's like such a good way to describe this sort of game. Because of like, you know, they have this in the past where it's like there's chemicals and stuff like that, and the fluids like interact with one another. Like if you pour water on fire, it'll put it out. Yeah. If you have fire on like acid or whatever, it'll explode, those types of things. All that's here as well. But like it just blends so well into the D&D environment. So for example, like actual spell in D&D is like add or remove water, you know, like, and that works like within the environment. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. I think the hype is real for this game. And again, I'm only a third of the way through it, and I did literally everything though in the first area. Like there's an option where they tell you to go one of two directions. I went both. And then when I got to the end of it, where I was about to go to like a point of no return, I just went down the other one too, just so I could see like fully what the game was about.
Yeah.
It's great.
What party are you rolling with?
So I'm Monk, I'm in the front.
Who has clothes on?
Yeah. So Shadowheart's there as the healer, because I think that's the only healer option. And I think that's somewhat intentional, since it seems to be kind of critical to the story as well. Mm-hmm. So Shadowheart, me, I have another like fighter that'll be up in front. And then kind of my wild card fourth slot is Will. Have you seen that character yet?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So he's a warlock. And so the thing that I really like about him, at like level 3, you get counter magic spell, which is just a reaction. And it basically stops somebody else from casting a magic spell.
Hmm.
And so there's like two uses of that, which is like great. And so, mm-hmm. yeah, so mostly what it is like the two strong people just run in and just start mowing people down. Healer makes sure that everyone's still alive at the end of it. But she's starting to lean into, you can do like divine, like attacks that work better against certain people. Mm-hmm. And the warlock will kind of, he has like range eldritch spells that are buffed out that are decent. But he's like, he's the most like wild card one. He kind of fills whatever gap is needed in the particular battle.
Yeah.
That's so crazy to me. Cause I'm using Shadowheart as well, but mm-hmm. I'm using her as like a tank.
Okay. Oh, so she's running in.
Yeah.
She's running in with her shield and her mace.
Clerics mm-hmm. can do that. Mm-hmm.
And, particularly she comes, I think, out of the box with, the ability, or maybe it's the subclass that I chose, to cast like an illusory version of herself.
Yeah.
That then basically grants everyone that's fighting next to it, advantage. So it's like, you know, kind of flanks for you. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. And yeah, I mean, so she plops that down at the beginning of the fight and then just is at the center of the fray, her and her mirror image with advantage crushing everyone.
Gotcha.
And so it's so cool to me that we're using them in different ways. Cause the other thing I've used her for is buffing, not really healing.
Mm-hmm.
But buffing, specifically my character.
Yeah.
So wake up, cast speak with animals, cast, it's like chitinous shell or something like that, that gives me extra hit points, cast long strider. And then cast from Shadowheart. I think it's called Pass Without Trace, or it's like the individual version of that, which is like you get advantage in all your stealth checks. And so out the gate without spending a single spell slot, I've got 4 day long buffs on me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then there's a bunch of other stuff that I'll cast if I think I'm about to get into combat that lasts, 10 turns or so. And, mm-hmm. and so, yeah, like it's so funny. Like you're using her as the healer. I'm using her as like a buffer slash tank. Mm-hmm. It's really cool that you can build differently like that.
Do you have control over the way that they level up? Can you pick their feats and stuff?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes. And it works like pretty one-to-one with the D&D system. Cool. So like, yeah, like at the appropriate place, like on when you level to 4 or 8 or something like that, you pick a feat. Then the feat can be ability, just gaining ability points if you want to do that, or it could be something specific. Mm-hmm. You choose specialization, I think, around class 3, which I think is typical. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it all maps to the D&D system. Like, you know, with a rogue, you can specialize as an assassin. With a monk, you can do Way of the Open Fist or Way of the, I don't know, the other ones, like spear or something like that. But yeah, it's great. And back to like the decisions of like how you roll your party, I do find a lot of it is related to the gear that you find and how you pick up, or that can affect things. So like,
interesting.
Because there's like one item I picked up where when you heal someone, like it stacks, like, or it'll give them like 3 temporary hit points as well. And so like, I think that's part of why I might just have like a centralized healer instead of having it like everybody have their own like healing spells.
And yeah, like the base healing spell is like 1d4 plus 3 or something like that. So 3 extra hit points is no joke.
Yeah. Yeah. And, before, when you were talking about like in Starfield, like having a level 12 versus level 2 or whatever, like here, just like a single level feels like such a big difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's like, if you see someone who's like 2 levels above you or something, you're like, I'm not going to fight that person. I'm going to try and trigger something else. Yeah. And then likewise, once you've like gone to literally every place that you can go, when you're like 1 or 2 levels above the people you're fighting, you're like, this is a breeze now. I can like stroll through this combat and feel like really confident about it. So yeah, it's
that's great.
Yeah, the game is really cool. I think if I play again, I might want to do a bard for another run through and have like that person be like kind of like the healer, but more like the buffer, I guess, for everybody.
Yeah.
I've heard it said that monk and bard are the 2 classes that aren't really represented in an NPC somewhere. So you're,
yeah,
at least in terms of getting to see everything, those are good choices.
I was going to ask,
monks in 5e, are they alignment constrained? Because I know in 3 and 3.5,
I'm pretty sure 5e gets rid of alignment constraints.
Okay, cool.
What does that mean, alignment constrained?
So like, it means that you cannot use your special abilities, or you cannot level in that class anymore if your alignment falls out of a certain range. So like paladins would have to be lawful good. And if they fell out of that, then it would be. And then monks in previous editions had to be some flavor of lawful in order to go.
Yeah. They don't have that represented, no. But okay. I don't think that's in the 5e either.
No, what David said makes sense.
Yeah, but the monks are pretty one-to-one with what they're like in D&D. They have key points, like KI, which is like kind of like the energy that flows through everything. Yeah. But like so many of the classes are like that, where you have some term like that, where you have things that grow over, you know, as you level up. And then with those, you can kind of do extra special things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Channel divinities.
And spell slots is, of course, the base one for a lot of them. Does the druid, do they have spell slots, or do they have anything like that?
They do. So they've got spell slots, and you can prepare, switch up your roster of spells, I think just between combats.
Okay.
So that's nice. And then they have wild shapes.
Yeah.
I'm doing this with my actual D&D druid as well, which, I just basically tried to one for one make my real life D&D character as close as I could.
Nice.
And so I took, there's the variant of druid that doesn't really focus on like having a familiar or turning into beast forms.
Okay.
And instead it takes that the chitinous exterior or whatever that gives you extra hit points. And then also powers up one of these other spells and makes it deal double damage while it's active. So I'm basically playing a druid that is more of a blaster spellcaster type.
Mm. So who else is in your party? You got Shadowheart.
I've got Shadowheart as a tank slash buffer. I've got Laziel as a fighter, frontline fighter. And then I've got Gale, the wizard. I chose for him, it's like the time domain or the something like that. But he, at the beginning of every, or after every long rest, he rolls 2 portent dice.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm saying that right. And I just have those numbers, like right now it's a 19 and 11. I have those in my back pocket the entire day. any roll that happens in near him could be an enemy attack. It could be my, you know, casting something. Gosh. You can just pause time and it says, do you want to replace this with a portent dice? And you can do that twice. But you can make someone miss or make sure your thing hits or make sure your persuasion check goes through. Whole like buffing thing.
Does it ask you that like all the time though, since they're constantly rolling die, or
anytime there would be an unfavorable outcome?
Okay. So
it doesn't ask if it goes your way.
Got it.
But anytime something bad is about to happen, it'll ask if you want to use a portent dice.
That still seems like it would be a lot though. Well, I guess maybe he's not getting hit since he's in the back, so.
Well, he's not getting hit, but you know, he can use it for other. Yeah, he can use it for anyone you're right. around him. But you know, it's only two charges and it's one button click to continue. But adds this wrinkle of like, basically, I never have to fail if I don't want to. The other thing is I'm using is Shadowheart has guidance, so I constantly have a plus one to plus four on all my checks.
Yeah.
And then she also, as a second level spell, can take. I forget what it's called, but it basically gives you advantage on all checks.
It's like Cat's Grace, I think.
No,
what class is this?
It's a cleric. I forget what version of cleric it is. But basically she, you know, for a given ability, so like your dex or your strength, or you just pick one of those, and then every check related to that you have advantage on.
Yeah.
She is Buffy McBuffface.
Yeah, that's
my special ability is being good at everything.
Yeah. I mean, basically that's what I'm doing. It's like I will never fail, and I probably have to long rest more frequently, but the game seems very forgiving of like
Absolutely.
Taking the time to reset and long rest and get all your stuff back.
Yeah, so we should explain how that works a little bit. It's basically you can pause the menu at any time as long as you're not like in the middle of combat or something like that, and you can return to camp. And what camp is just an area where everyone's kind of set up and resting. So in D&D, you're like, the party's going to take a long rest. And like, you assume you're just resting wherever you are in the campaign or whatever. But like here, it's like kind of a hideaway. And the background of where they're in, or the room that where they're in, like changes based where you are on the outer map.
That's so cool.
Yeah. So it's like, if you're out on the beach or something, if you're by like the water and stuff in the outer map, like the camp will just kind of be this kind of like secluded, like a place that matches that. It's like on the beach and stuff like that. And then if you're like in some sort of castle, you know, like you're in this like tucked away room when you go to camp and stuff like that. Really like nice detail. So you can talk to your companions. It's kind of like a place where you can rest. You can like mess around with items. There's a chest where you can send things like automatically that you find in the world. If it's like something heavy, for example, you don't want to carry it on your person, so you can just send it to camp. But then when you're done, you go to sleep for the night, and basically all these supplies that you've been picking up, like apples or whatever, like wine, stuff like that, they each have a value of like how much, like of how much they'll give you points wise to this event, where you need to come up with like 40 points of like nourishment, and then all your people will be completely rested if you spend that. There's also just like camping supplies you can find, which is a single item that just gives you 40 out of 40 immediately. Mm-hmm. So that's like a nice like thematic like way to tie in not only D&D, but it also gives justification for having all these fucking items everywhere and having you pick them up and like actually like manage them and stuff.
Which, I have not poked into every corner, but I've been fairly Roomba-y in picking up stuff like that.
Yeah.
I think I have enough supplies for 10 long rests on me.
Exactly. Right now, so. Yeah. Yeah, it's
not going to come up that I'll ever have to scrounge to rest.
Exactly. Yeah, I think when I first started, I tried to stretch really far and be like, all right, I need to take as few like long rests as possible. But like anymore, it's like, oh, I just want I'm like one spell slot's gone. All right, we're going to long rest and get that back or something. You know, it's like very flippantly, we'll long rest now. Mm-hmm. But it's just it's just a great implementation of the D&D system, though.
Really is.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, yeah, I think gilded out the wazoo, like, because I've similarly Roombud and stuff, and like whenever I find a merchant, it's like, here, take all my stuff, please, you know, give me your one rare item and I'll give you 100 swords.
You throw this away.
Yeah. And then on top of all this, an interesting mechanic that they have is they, you know, you have these kind of like settlements. Like, I think from the get-go, one of the early ones is there's like a group of mages with some tieflings in one camp, and across the way there's a goblin camp, and they are like kind of butting heads constantly. Depending upon how you align with either of those factions and like the leaders of those factions, you can basically turn hostile towards an entire faction, and then you basically have to lay waste to that entire area because they are all hostile to you. But it gives you the flexibility to kind of side with whoever you want to. There's probably a way to kill everyone if you really wanted to. I don't think there's a choice to make everyone happy all the time, but
to contrast with Starfield, I indulged in my evil side a little bit in that camp, in that like one side has a prisoner that someone is about to shoot, and I chose not to intervene.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then what was the other thing? Oh, one of my party members and a main character, like during a long rest, came at me. I won't get into details, but I basically like caught them trying to kill me. And my reaction is like, nah, fuck that. You'd like, if I hadn't woken up, I'd be dead right now. I'm not having you around. And I killed him back.
Ooh.
He's dead. All the characters commented on it. And like that, that happened.
Well, he started it.
He so very much did. But like, again, to feel like, okay, you can just kill the like poster boy for this game.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, okay. I have a plan for that.
You only need three other people.
Exactly. Well, you were talking about keeping your camp manageable. That's how I keep my camp manageable.
They're both naked. One's above ground, one's underground.
Oh, and you better know I stripped his body for everything to sell.
Well, yeah.
It's also
my camping supplies.
It's also like super forgiving in the sense that you have scrolls to revive people if they've died.
And there's an NPC for that too.
Yes, you're right. And so it's very forgiving. Like even if things go south in combat and like two or three people die and they lose like their, you know, death rolls, because they have death rolls the same way in actual D&D, which is you roll, if it gets to like three, one direction or another, you either stabilize or die. Mm-hmm. But even if that happens, you can bring them back, which is nice, and it's super forgiving. That said, I did run into a bug where a member just completely ghosted and was gone, so I had to replay like a half an hour worth of games to fix that. But it's a minor bug. It's not not enough to make me upset with the game or anything.
I don't even know if this is a bug. The one bug that I've encountered, my wizard can summon a familiar.
Yeah.
And there's a part of the game. So I have words on Charm Person, because this is a great one-for-one implementation of D&D, except Charm Person doesn't make the person think you're their friend. It just keeps them from attacking you.
Yeah.
Mm.
And I didn't realize this until there was a little girl, like a pickpocket that I had found out, who was like, get out of my hideout. I'm counting down from 10, 10, 9, 8. And so I was like, all right, Charm Person succeeded. And then she just stopped counting, kind of looked at me and ran away.
But
I was like, well, that what happened there? So chase after her, come to find out that she ran out of the hideout and told everyone that I was, you know, like basically preying on small children. Which I was like, I charmed you. What the hell?
Yeah. Apparently it wore off.
Well, yeah. And so I succeeded the check to convince everyone like, no, she's lying, which she was.
That so vindictively.
Look, she's a little shit and I want nothing to do with her. But
tiefling hater.
Yeah, it's got nothing to do with it, man. So, you know, I diffused the situation, except somehow the game did not count that check towards the familiar.
Oh.
And it's at that point it was a crow. It can take different forms. And I, like, you know, 15 minutes later was exploring an area of the town. And I was like, oh, there's a thing over there. I bet I could fly there with the crow. I can't get there with the rest of my party, but I can at least like get the crow over there to see what's what. click on the crow, and immediately the crow is arrested. Well,
lock him up.
Oh my God. Taking him to a little birdhouse with a barred door in front of the circular entry.
No, that's the best part. Is first off, they still gave him a chance to explain himself, but he's a crow. So of course he
confess your crimes, buddy.
Did they have handcuffs small enough for him?
No, well, they put him in just the regular jail cell. But he's a familiar, he's a celestial being. And so the second the wizard walked away from the jail cell, he just like wormed through the bars to get back to his But I can't click on the crow in town anymore because they'll just arrest him again.
I do think the majority of like the tough things happen, or the bugs or breaking things happen around like the arrest mechanic, and when they put you like I had that happen where it's like they put me in a cell and it's a place where there's like acid on the floor, so I'm dying, so I start to run out, but they're like, nope, back in the cell. And it kept porting me back there and said until I would die, and it's like, well, that doesn't seem right.
Yeah, that's but, not great.
Yeah, there are a few things like that, but I think since I think you do need a little bit of save hygiene in this game, because the autosaves are sometimes infrequent. Or they're like, because it's usually tied to when you enter a new area. So if you just spend like an hour in the same area and you're doing like a bunch of like, you know, item management or talking to people and stuff like that, there might not be an autosave. So you do need to kind of build the muscle memory to like save like frequently.
Yeah. It will save before something major happens.
Yes.
And I've kind of keyed into that. We're like, autosave will proc all of a sudden. I'm like, oh shit, what?
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Start buffing up.
Yeah. but yeah, usually if something like buggy happens, it's not too big of a deal. Just reload like 20 minutes before and just do that.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, one thing I forgot to mention, the inspiration mechanic. This is something in D&D where it's like, if you impress your DM, they're like, you have inspiration. And you can use that to, I'm not sure, I guess I forget how you use it in D&D, but in this game.
Is it to get advantage on rolls? Is it for you to roll twice, or is it?
That's right.
Yeah.
So in the game implementation, it allows you to re-roll if you want to, which is sort of like advantage, but I guess it's a little bit different.
So think of that like the portent dice, right? So
yeah.
The, you know, your inspiration offers are not, all consuming, right? Or they're not, they don't get in the way.
Yeah.
Same thing with the portent dice. It's just also the advantage that you know the result.
Gotcha. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's just like really well implemented in the game. And then and like how they do like thieves tools and stuff. Basically you collect thieves tools, and if you try and lockpick something, if you fail, you lose it. I'm not sure if you lose it if you succeed or not. It might cost either way. But you can re-roll based on the number of like thieves tools you have. Mm-hmm. And there's certainly some checks that are like where the check will be 30 or something like that, where it's like, okay, it's possible to get that, but you need a class entirely devoted to getting that sort of thing, plus guidance, plus advantage, plus all that stuff,
plus luck.
Plus luck. I just can't say enough good things about at least the open first act of this game.
And I'll tell you what, the number of times where I have hit the DC exactly is mind-boggling to me. Because it's so tense, and you have this like reaction that you do around the D&D table, but the fact that it is like that well balanced, that I see that way more often than I would have expected.
Do you not skip to the end of the die roll? Do you watch the animation?
No, I watched the animation.
All right.
Primarily because I didn't realize you could skip.
Yeah, so. if you press whatever the button is, it's like, I mean, I'm not trying to say you should or anything, but I was just curious.
Well, and do you just click on the dice, or do you actually like, you know, roll it with your mace? With your mouse.
So since it's console, like you press triangle to roll the die, and then if you press triangle again, it'll snap to like what the final result is.
Yeah.
Got it. Yeah. On PC, you can literally like grab and throw the dice.
Wow.
But I think it just kicks into the pre-done animation, because it's not like it follows the velocity of it or anything, but it still feels good.
That's cool. Yeah. Yeah. And there's so many set pieces that are like, yes, this is D&D, you know, it's like, they got spiders, they got forges, they got sweet things, you know, like, yeah, it's awesome.
It sounds amazing. The only reason I have not played it is A, because of work, and B, because I very consciously took last week off of playing video games.
Yeah.
Slacker.
It is a dense game, and it is like, yeah, it would take some time to to get through.
Oh, it has that D&D quality of like, hey, I just did a 2-hour session and it was one combat.
Yeah, yeah.
Exploring one house.
And that's the way that's the way Divinity is too. Like, nice.
Yeah, it's good. I think one final thing I'll say is I'm starting to see the choices you make do have long-term consequences. What reminded me of this, Dennis, when you were saying saving that one person in the prison, that does come up later, but it's just like such a tiny choice, you know, like shuffled about and, you know, all these other choices. So,
and I didn't really know that the person was actually going to shoot the prisoner as well. Like, there was something going on. I was like, I'll watch and see how this plays out a bit. And it escalated way faster than I thought.
Didn't think he had it in him, did you?
I love the progression of your justification. Like, I didn't know it was going to happen.
Yeah. Well, and the prisoner essentially said what Cole just said. Like, you don't have it in you. So they basically were asking for it. Yeah, it's a real fun game so far.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Dottie's being a little shit. Oh my gosh.
Dottie.
So Ben, did you have anything else besides Baldur's Gate?
That is plenty of a game to be playing I don't have time to play anything else if I'm playing Baldur's Gate.
The only thing that I actually have played, I've not done any like sit down games, but I because I did do some cleaning and re-cleared out my living room, did do some VR and jumped back into Pistol Whip, which feels like one of those perfect VR games alongside Beat Saber and Superhot.
How does it work?
Man, Pistol Whip is so good. It's an on-rail shooter that is also a rhythm game. The visuals are very like glitchy polygonal kind of sense, but each level is a song, and you are progressing down this long hallway, and enemies will pop out and shoot on the beat, and they pop out like, you know, near and far to you, either early or late, so you've got to be like really situationally aware. And you know, you aim and shoot in VR. And something that is very canny is that there is a large amount of aim assist, so you always feel like a badass. You know, like you can miss, it is possible, but you only notice how much like help it is giving you when you do a modifier that takes that away, and you have to be as accurate as possible. You know,
You're far more likely to get penalized for not shooting at the right time than not shooting in the right place.
Yes. Yeah. And also you get extra points for shooting on the beat. Right. You end up in these very intricate situations where, you know, the whole thing is kind of meant to make you feel a little bit like John Wick, where people are coming at you from all angles and you are just pop, pop, pop. And you know, doing your reloads very quickly in between, kind of mastering that scenario.
How physical is it in relation to like a Beat Saber?
It's pretty physical. So it has some of the same stuff. Like, you know, how in Beat Saber, where sometimes the big like cube will come at you and you have to like duck or lean out of the way in order to pass it. That happens in this, with some frequency, more on higher difficulties, more in like the later stages of the campaign. But part of the physicality of it, and something that does make it feel more active than Beat Saber, is that you are dodging bullets as well.
Nice.
Yeah. Cool. So like when an enemy is about to shoot you, regardless of where you're going to be when that bullet is coming toward you, it will show you like in VR, it will like flash like, hey, this is where it is going to be and the path that it is following when it's going to hit you at first. And then you will see it tracking through the air relatively slowly, again, slower at easier speed, at easier difficulty, faster at more. And you have to dodge so that like your head box is not going to intersect with it. And so you end up doing an awful lot of like ridiculous things to get out of the way of these bullets, but also doing so in such a way that you can fire off shots mid dodge, or dodge in such a way that, you know, in your recovery, you're going to be set up to dodge this next thing. So there is like a strategy to it and I feel authorized as somebody who's been working out for a few months, it does activate your core. It is a real like core and thighs kind of thing. As you are trying to keep your balance going and you weaving, David bobbing and weaving.
Yes.
Yeah.
I know some games are more sensitive if you like go out of a box or if your head's at a certain angle, but I guess this has to be pretty lenient if you're doing that type of movement all the time. Or
yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's good at tracking you. When you say sensitive about going out of a box or something like that, are you talking about like the play zone, like your area that you defined, or
but even beyond that, like if like you look too far vertically or something like that, or like some of them give kind of tighter constraints on like what your movement is or how your orientation is.
Yeah, you're always going to be moving forward. And you can look behind you, but there's really nothing of importance back there. Gotcha. Maybe on higher difficulties, people can fire at you from behind if you miss them or something like that.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. But most of what you are doing, things can attack you from above or below. So it behooves you to kind of know to keep your head on a swivel.
So this is like Pokemon Snipe then.
Yeah, that's actually a pretty good way to put it. That was really clever, Ben. I think you did a good job with that one.
Thank you.
Yeah. I don't know. It is like one of those canonical VR games, and I was happy to be able to pull it back out again. God, I wish there was better music in it. And by better music, I mean like to my taste. It's all like electronic-y dance kind of stuff, similar to like a Beat Saber or like a Tetris effect kind of thing. And like, I'm sure that music is fine. It's just not for me, you know? So like, I don't know, to have even just like make a couple levels based on like songs from Rock Band or something like that. Give me my old ass dinosaur music, please. And thank you. Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of my only complaint, but there's enough going on the non-rhythm level that I'm okay with it. Yeah. Any questions about Pistol Whip?
I'm intrigued. I like electronic music, so that's not a barrier for me.
Is there much in the way of like, oh, a campaign with a final boss or what have you?
It's more like individual, like little themed little scenes. I've not noticed like a storyline or a through line kind of deal. Okay.
Gotcha.
Okay. Fair.
Yeah. Pistol Whip PSVR 2. It seems like it would be on there.
It sounds kind of like Super Hot almost, except not without the mechanic.
Yeah. Yeah. At least there is a like an aesthetic similarity with like the glitchy kind of like low poly kind of look to it. This is much more colorful and frenetic in the way that it is. Pistol Whip is on PSVR, PSVR 2, Ben.
Yeah.
Ah, but it's $30. That's it's the VR tax, right?
I've seen it before. The cover does not indicate like anything of what you're describing with this game. So advertise it as a
marketing misstep, you think?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Good.
I thought it was a Western.
Oh yeah, I think there are some like Western-ish campaigns in there.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a segment.
Mm-hmm. Boy, howdy.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
Yeah, clearly I've got Baldur's Gate 3 on the mind. and something we didn't talk about is that every party member has underwear with insightful flavor text on it, which I think we can all agree is the pinnacle of video game exposition. So, Let's extend that out further. What underwear and accompanying flavor text would characters from other games have?
Yeah. And I'll get us started here with Callum, who says Minsk's underwear from Baldur's Gate and Baldur's Gate 2 covered in hamster fur for some reason. somebody typing? No, wait. Oh, weird. Maybe one's going to come in. Who knows?
Oh, that might be me having just dropped in the one from Slack.
Ah, gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Makes sense with Minsk. I mean, Boo would have to, you know, Boo wouldn't be content to stay in his pocket, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ben, what does Maniop say?
Madoff says, I think Leon from Resident Evil 4 is the kind of person who keeps Speedos on under his clothes most of the time, just in case he has to dip in the water, and he de facto only wears them now. He would write the text himself and would include words tactical, efficient, and stylish. He would also not want anything bigger so that he could show off his tribal thigh tattoo that I just know he has.
Yeah. Perfect. No notes.
Yeah. That is a very good description.
That is the kind of response I was hoping for.
Yeah. I'll do mine, just to maintain order here. Harry from Disco Elysium, and the description is, it'd be faster to name the bodily fluids that aren't on this.
Oh. That's pretty good.
Ben, how about you?
You get inspiration, Cole. Much like the viewers, I don't have an answer for this, and I was not able to come up with one in time. I was trying to think of which character would have no underwear and that be the joke, but I couldn't even come up with that.
David, how about you?
Man, I've got nothing. I'm sorry.
Dennis, you stumped him.
I didn't know this was going to be so hard. I went just straight to Mario, right?
Okay.
Which is look inside for a mushroom of growth.
Oh, God. Oh, that's got to be the shortest multiplayer section ever.
Ironically. It's a grower, not a shower.
Yeah. So thank you, those of you who participated. If you want to participate in these in the future, go to the Duckfeed community group on Facebook and watch the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. And thank you, Dennis, for posting. The end boss. Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games and how we feel about them. I feel like as of right now, we should lead with the Unity thing.
Yeah.
Because it's the biggest story. It is also the one that is most likely to change. My conspiracy theory is that this is kind of a hangout. So people get really, really upset about the terms that they propose. And then we'll be less upset when it seems like they compromised.
It's a small step in the wrong direction. Yeah. Instead of large one.
So Dennis, why don't you summarize what's going on here with Unity?
Yeah. I mean, Unity is the foundation for so many games, and particularly for games created by smaller indie devs.
Yes.
It is to say it's ubiquitous is selling it short. Like it really is everywhere. And they, out of nowhere, having asked no one and having no one asking for it, announced recently that they are changing their pricing model. And they are going effectively from a revenue-based model where you share a percentage of your revenue, makes sense, to an installs-based model. And by that, I mean you'll have to pay every time someone installs your game.
Mm-hmm.
And
you can tell that nobody consulted an actual developer, because when people pointed out, hey, this is a system that cranky people can abuse in order to bankrupt us, they said, oh, that thought never occurred to us.
Yeah. Like, what the absolute fuck.
Yeah.
It just asinine. I don't know where the genesis was coming from. I can't imagine that Unity was struggling to pay the bills.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, you're actually only the foundational platform for everyone. How do you screw that up?
Apparently there's been some talk that they have been actually struggling with profitability.
How do you screw it's got to be in the sense of like investors want you to do more than you did last
year. Well, so the way their pricing model works is you don't pay anything for it until your game starts making over 200K.
Yeah.
And so So even though it is a very accessible tool, like I can make a game, like people can make games in Unity, but they don't charge those people. And that's part of the appeal, because they're trying to grow it and make it accessible. At a certain point, they're probably going to flip the switch and try and charge people more like this. But even with this change, it still doesn't affect people if your game's not making more than that amount of money.
Yeah. So, and I think there could be a way to do a with installs version that is equitable, but they just like so blatantly had no thought, no explanation behind it. It just really, really stood out.
Yeah.
So one of the, I guess you could say, conspiracy theories I heard for this is the argument that Unity has a reputation for being what you make, like shovelware and free to play games and stuff like that.
That's mostly that, a function of the asset store.
And that then makes it less attractive to high-end, high-dollar AAA developers.
Mm-hmm.
So the argument was this was explicitly meant to chase away low-end developers because they're actually bad for the brand.
Right. Well,
it's also a difference.
Fails. Oh, go ahead.
It's also a difference in the programming language because it's backed by C#, whereas like Unreal is C++. So there's more people that can do C# than there can do C++. And that's like another point of accessibility.
Really?
Mm-hmm. That surprises me.
Is C++ still, that was on its way out in like early computing classes when I took that, made that abortive attempt at studying CS. Is that still even taught in schools?
It's still used in games. Yeah. It depends on the industry, right? Like,
yeah.
If you're like doing, yeah, yeah. But for things that need to be like an application that runs and needs to be really performant, yeah, it's going to still be C++ based.
Yeah. The developer behind Gloomwood, or one of them, David Oshry, has said very insightful things about this. I found them to be pretty insightful, kind of explaining like, hey, Gloomwood's going to be the last game that I make in Unity, even if they revert these changes, primarily because this has shown like it's just an absolute breach of trust.
Yeah. That,
and whatever system they put out is going to be, so whatever they are going to use to calculate the number of installs, no matter how they try to hedge around like, oh, it's only going to be per device, and it's not going to count the second install, and if it's a demo but only some demos and blah blah blah, like they can gerrymander around all of that, but if that mechanism for counting the installs is a black box, they have no incentive to actually report that accurately, right?
Yeah,
they're always going to favor over reporting. And it just kind of shows like a complete disregard for a huge slice of the people who rely on and have spent years over a decade learning that pipeline, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I saw, and that's been kind of like the most coherent bit of like upset that I have seen. That and people saying, oh, well, I'll just move to Unreal, or I will move to XYZ other engine, because of the way all of this is organized, basically everything being SaaS and subscription or blah, 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 financialized in a way. There is no guarantee that whatever you go and learn is going to stay. Is going to stay attractive. So like, yeah. It's just a never ending field of rugs waiting to be pulled.
Yeah. Unfortunately. Yes.
So there was one, there's an open source, engine that I heard a lot.
Godot something or other.
Yeah. Godot. Something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know nothing of it, but
yeah, no,
everyone's
I don't know
waiting for Godot.
Yeah. Yeah. Saw people talking about Game Maker and their licensing, stuff like that. It sucks, man. Like the fact that you can't just pay a certain amount of money and have access to a thing.
Yeah. Well, and I think what they're going for just completely ignores the potential that like new business models are going to be made.
Mm-hmm.
And like I teach a class on this, like the industry is notorious for like being the spearhead for finding new business models. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I don't know what they were thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully by the time this episode comes out, in 2 days after recording this, there will be at least something of a better place. But like, I don't know, based on the dev talk that I'm seeing, it'll take a lot to restore that trust.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
They, in trying to monetize or what have you, they are opening the door wide for competition.
Yeah. I mean, and like in a weird way, trying to, God, they really should have seen what Wizards tried to do. This is almost a retread of a very similar thing with a lot of the same dynamics, involving indie creators. Fuck, man.
I think that supports your thought that this is, they're going to trot something better, quote unquote, out in a couple days, hoping everyone will celebrate it.
Yeah. John Riccitiello, former EA boss who led EA into a whole bunch of trouble, is now the head of Unity. And it was reported that, like, right after they announced this, he dropped like 2,000 shares of stock, sold it. It's like, you asshole.
Oh my God. Yeah. Craziness.
Ben, what's happening with Death Stranding?
This is a much weirder announcement that was also made today. It's coming to iPhone this year.
Yeah.
Who asked?
Also, the Resident Evil 4 remake is coming to iPhone. Like, there's a whole bunch. Was there an iPhone announcement event where all this stuff was put out? Or is this separate from that?
That is a question that is fair to ask somebody who's making a podcast about video games.
Yeah, it's the one iPhone event that I didn't watch just because I kind of knew nothing huge was going to be coming. And so I don't know if this was announced at that. Weird. If you had a Backbone controller, I could see it being real, you know, fine to play on that.
Yeah. It's like, do you do the balance mechanics with the phone's gyro thing as well?
Yeah, it's possible. Yeah.
But in any case, I don't see the audience for this. Like, who's the casual player who's like, you know, I'm going to dip into Death Stranding.
Yeah. playing that slow meditative game on the go with all of those very long cutscenes, those two seem to be pulling in different directions.
Yeah. I suppose, like, yeah. Okay. Instead of like sitting in my living room watching this 2-hour cutscene, like I'll watch it on the train or something like that. Then
yeah,
maybe that can make sense, but it's just weird news story from a weird person, Kojima.
But yeah.
Whatever. It's the director's cut version too.
Oh yeah. I need to replay that so I can see the director's cut stuff. There's lots of new like road and movement technology in that. Let's see. I've got a new story about Stalker 2. The game and developer who have faced nothing but just horrible setbacks. There was a fire at their offices. Nobody was hurt. And apparently like the game assets are fine. But who knows how long this is going to set it back, because the office needs to be restored. It is being investigated for foul play, primarily because they have also the developer GSC has also been subject to confirmed like Russian hacking attacks as well, trying to cause data loss, things like that. This is in addition to just the ambient pressure and just general, let's say, friction of being a Ukraine-based developer in the midst of this, what is this, going into year two, three of an ongoing invasion, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it seems like they're matching the making of the movie Stalker pretty well then.
Well, I mean, most of them would have to die from being poisoned for that to be the case.
Yeah, but that'll be later, though.
Yes, it will. Yes. So who knows? They seem undeterred. I think literally the quote that I saw was, here's the quote in their Discord server. Despite the setback, developers remain intent on releasing Stalker 2, and their confidence is motivated by the fact that they've, quote, dealt with worse than this before.
Yeah, man.
So at the very least, they are plucky. That quote is from their Discord, but also the beginning of that is from the Destructoid article that I pulled for this. David, you got a story?
Yes, so I do. So it turns out that there was a update to iOS that introduces support for UVC, which is apparently USB video class. And long story short, that means that the iPad can now get input from, you know, various webcams and things like that that attach over USB-C. Some guy did is apparently there is some sort of open source Game Boy hardware that exists.
Yeah.
And a dock that allows you to basically connect it to a monitor.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out, because of kind of the weird way that iOS implemented this, or rather specifically the way they implement FaceTime, any source of video, FaceTime will recognize as a camera input.
Okay.
So for example, one of the other things he does in this is hooks up his Switch to FaceTime and plays Elden Ring as his like FaceTime video.
Hooks up his Steam Deck, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, he's using the analog pocket. That makes sense. Yeah.
And so, but yeah, like I said, open source Game Boy hardware. So he does what any of us would do and proceeds to FaceTime with people using a Game Boy camera.
It's perfect is what it is. I have no notes again, once more. God, I love the Game Boy camera aesthetic. It's so good.
Yep.
Oh gosh. Yeah. There's this person, oh gosh, it was Federico Vitici who wrote about it, but it was not the person who did that. No, it was Federico, I think. Okay. Longtime Apple person. That is amazing. I love that. And I think everybody should do it.
Yep. That should be this is the future we want. Let's be honest.
Yeah. Game Boy cameras for all. They're actually not that expensive. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. If you see them at like shows and stuff, you can get one for like about $30 is what I've seen. Yeah. Well, how do you all feel about bundling it up?
Buttons.
The credit. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to level number 472. We really appreciate you taking the time. If you would like to support us, you can go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv and support the whole network, get bonus content, things like that. Join the DuckFeed community group on Facebook to watch for the multiplayer going up. Leave ratings or reviews in your podcast directory of choice, and tell some friends. Word of mouth has always been our best friend for getting this out. Is there anything I am forgetting?
Meet up with us in person if we're at a con.
Yeah. Sneak up on us. Hit us.
Oh, roll for stealth.
Yeah. Don't be afraid to approach. Cool. Dennis, you got anything for Deck of Wonders or your other endeavors?
Deck of Wonders is up on Amazon, so nothing new there. For Slay by Comment, there's some very exciting stuff coming that I will not talk about yet, but should be out in the ether by the time this is up.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
Nice. Cool. Well, that sounds like everything. I have been Cole Ross. You can find me on Blue Sky at Cole Ross.
Oh, that's the new thing I should talk about. I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me on Blue Sky. Okay. At Furia Games, I think.
Nice.
No underscores, no nothing, just Furia Games.
Cool.
It is good to be back.
Yeah.
I'm David Mysmith. You can find me at cons, apparently.
I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles. Okay, I've got two. I have Hatchet Habits. And right. I have Crow Jail.
Nice.
So presumably, do you escape Crow Jail with a crowbar?
No, with a rasp.
I have two as well.
Okay.
I have type 1.25 fun. From early on.
Okay.
And then I also have, I think this is subordinate to yours, Cole, but I bet you haven't hatcheted anyone.
Okay. All right. Ben, you got anything?
I didn't write anything down. I just remembered Pokemon Snipe, and I remember the thing you said, Cole, that made me laugh very hard and gave you inspiration, but now I can't remember it.
Oh, no. Oh God! Oh, the Disco Elysium underpants.
Yeah.
I don't know how I can abbreviate that. So
fair.
David, you got anything?
I do not. I was the slacker today.
Hatchet Habit seems to get it by laughs.
Yeah, I like that.
Cool. All right. It is decided.
Woohoo.